There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast that brings together the best bits of today's show from Thursday, February the 27th.
This morning, we're talking about confidence.
Let them bring on all their problems. I'll do better than my best. I have confidence they'll put me to the test. But I'll make them see I have confidence in me. Somehow I will impress them.
Julie Andrews from The Sound of Music talking about confidence. And that's our theme this morning on The Business Breakfast, because there's a bit of an anomaly that we've noticed over the past week or so of Tom presenting The Business Breakfast. And that is that the prevailing mood and story is one of challenges in the business community, particularly when it comes to retail. Here's a headline: UAE private sector shrinks in January for the first time since 2009. That's a story from earlier on this month, the Purchasing Managers Index survey from IHS Market. And that kind of chimes with a lot of what we're hearing, the messages that we get in from people. However, multiple stories over the past week or so suggest that actually there's quite a few companies that are doing really quite well. Mm. For example, Fitness First, opening gyms left, right and centre. The guys from Birkenstock, 250-year-old German sandal company. They're opening new stores in the UAE and across the region, left, right and centre. And we wanted to know why. So we got the guys from Birkenstock in this morning. We're going to hear the full interview with Jans Hattab shortly. But very briefly, this is him explaining why, A, they're expanding because they've had double-digit like-for-like sales growth over the past year, but they need physical stores because it's a touchy-feely product.
I think you have to have a balance between e-commerce and your brick and mortar business. Typically in the region here, the e-commerce business is still ranging below 10%. So it would be foolish to say, to give up on the brick and mortar strategy, where you actually meet the consumer face to face, where you have the conversation. Especially with our shoes or sandals, the face to face, the personal engagement with our consumer is still our utmost priority.
So I hadn't thought about it until then. It is one of, I suppose it's one of those products that you do really need to sort of road test in person, don't you? All good and well seeing it on a website and buying it on e-commerce. But if it arrives and you've got half a size wrong or half a size whatever, it's one of those ones that usually sits in the bottom of your cupboard and never gets returned, isn't it?
Genuinely, my knee surgeon, and I've seen plenty of them over the years, says you basically need a knee replacement. But in the meantime, buy yourself a very expensive knee brace and a pair of Birkenstocks to wear walking around the house.
You've got the knee brace.
Knee brace cost a fortune. I've got that, custom fitted. Haven't yet got myself down to the mall to buy the Birkenstocks. Maybe that will inspire me to spend my 200 dirhams or whatever it is they cost. But Birkenstocks doing really well. I mean, they're not a high-tech company. A 250-year-old German clog maker. And they're expanding. So there's clearly something happening. There are clearly some businesses doing well. So we've been speaking to a range of people about this. One of them is Neil Petch, veteran businessman here in Dubai. First of all, in the media industry, he's one of the founders of ITP Media Company. And for the past 10 years, the chairman and co-founder of VirtuZone, which is a company formation specialist. So they see thousands of new companies each year. They see the ones that don't work, but the ones that do work. So we asked him, given that, does he think companies like Birkenstock and Fitness First are getting it wrong expanding in a tough market, or getting it right?
If it's a good company, it's a good company. And one of the worst things that we could do is look at coronavirus and say, oh gosh, because of that, I'm suddenly going to start analysing a company in a completely different way. We have about 350 companies coming in, setting up every month with us. And the same ones that are going to be right when it's good times are going to be right now. So don't panic.
We've got a Twitter poll going this morning asking, what's the situation at your company? We're giving you three options. One, growth and investment. Two, little change. Or three, getting smaller. And to be honest, it's an even split now, Tom. We've had quite a few votes in. A third of people say growth and investment. 37% say little change. 28% say getting smaller. But it's pretty much an even split between the three. We asked Neil about the situation with his company, VirtuZone. Which option would he tick?
Yeah, we've had 6 years of constant revenue growth and in the last year, great profit growth as well. So, but I think that's, it's easy to be confused. Look, there are There are amazing opportunities out of adversity. That's one angle to this question, which I can talk to you about. And then there's the kind of business that can actually do well in times like this. So there are two things. The first thing I'd say for anyone thinking to get started at the moment is, you know, it's boring. It's you've got to get it right first time. You've got to build the foundations, because one of the biggest challenges is cash, is, you know, firstly getting your bank account up and running, which actually can be a little bit of a challenge. And once you've got that bank account, being able to, you know, when you want to grow, get hold of some cash. And if you don't have your accounts in place, if you don't have your corporate governance in place, then it's harder to do that. So this does play into the hands of more established, more professional players. It does make it harder for startups, which is why companies like VirtuZone are here, because we try and help people who are startups gain access to that expertise that otherwise they wouldn't know where to look for.
Neil Petch of VirtuZone.
He's got a good voice, isn't he, Petch?
He has got a very good voice.
He's got a good voice.
Yeah.
Like his voice.
And annoyingly successful in not one but two industries. Because, you know, we've known him for 20 years as Neil Petch from ITP. Very successful there, sold his shares, did well, and then set up another business that's very successful in a completely different industry, company formation. Good on you, Neil. Nice guy.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Companies that are defying the downturn to expand in the UAE, be it in retail or otherwise. Richard mentioned Fitness First a little earlier on in proceedings. The other brand that we'd like to talk about is, of course, Birkenstock. Now, for all those that know, Birkenstock is a German shoe manufacturer headquartered in Germany, sells Birkenstock, a German brand of sandals and other shoes, notable for their contoured cork and rubber foot beds, amongst others. We're going to talk more about the line later, but we want to find out more about the expansion and how the brand is doing it here. So we got the MD for the Middle East, Africa and India for Birkenstock. Jens Hattab joins us live in the studio. Jens, morning to you.
Yes, very good morning. Thanks
very much indeed for being with us. Now, Birkenstock is a brand that knows a thing or two about retail. 245 years in the business has seen the history and the evolution of said brand. 2020, though, a significant year. Six store openings aligned for this year. Two have been done already, and we're not even through February yet. You've got another four remaining. How on earth are you doing it?
Well, I mean, it's basically our ambition to be present across the region, in the UAE especially. We have a lot of stores already in the market, but our consumer demand is ever growing, both globally and regionally here. So, finding new spaces, we're working diligently with our franchise partner here, the Apparel Group, and we're looking at premium positioning of our stores to, bring the product nearer to our consumers.
So does the six we're talking about this year, will that bring overall the stores up to 28? Is that across the region?
Well, it's going to be slightly more than six. So, no, I think from an overall perspective, we currently have 25 stores here in the Gulf region, out of which half of them are in the UAE. We see easily a potential to double that in the near future. And, if all goes well, I think we should have another 10, 12 stores this year in the market.
I want to talk about your Dubai Mall store, if I can. January 2020 saw the reopening of the Birkenstock store there. All sorts to talk about. But, I mean, one thing that really surprised Rich and myself and others is it seems to fly in the face. A lot of people saying bricks and mortar shops are finished, e-commerce is taking over, etc. Shops are shutting down left, right and centre in the big malls. What was the reasoning behind it, the reopening and the rebranding, if you like?
Well, it's a number of things. First of all, I think you have to have a balance between e-commerce and your brick and mortar business. Typically in the region here, the e-commerce business is still ranging below 10%. So it would be foolish to say, to give up on the brick and mortar strategy, where you actually meet the consumer face to face, where you have the conversation. Especially with our shoes or sandals. Where you have to feel and experience our footbed, the functionality and the quality of the product. It's nothing better than stepping into the sandals and taking a walk around in the store, talking with our, experienced sales staff about the benefits, about the heritage of the brand and the materials and sustainable elements we're using in our products.
So the face-to-face, the personal engagement with our consumer is still our utmost priority. And there is no better place than a Birkenstock store to deliver that to our consumers.
So that touchy-feely approach, that experiential, that experience of going to a shop, is that what's going to drive footfall back into stores?
Yes, definitely. I mean, retail is part of, of a lifestyle, of an entertainment for the consumers. We see that across the region here, done to perfection with the type of mall environments that have been created over the last 10, 15 years that are not just a, pure drop-in shop and go out, but more of an entertainment and lifestyle experience. And the same need to be replicated in stores. You know, you need to have a touch point with the consumer, not just on doing transactions that can be done more easily, I agree, on the internet through the e-com shops, but, the personal touch, the also feedback from the consumer. It's not just looking at sales data in your business warehouse system. It's looking at what is moving, what consumers want.
To that end, to what consumers want, I mentioned there the 245-year history, the evolution of the brand in that time. I wanted to get through a conversation with you without mentioning the M-word, millennial. But given the fact that that seems to be one of the buzzwords at the moment, we're seeing a number of very established brands looking to attract a younger audience, a more millennial crowd. Is that the case with Birkenstock as well?
Well, you see, I mean, we have that question a lot, obviously, with the heritage and with being a global brand since the almost 1960s, we can easily say, I mean, we are a democratic brand. We don't target. Consumers find us. And the range of, age groups, I don't think is really relevant for us as a brand. It's not like we're trying to change or trying to very hard to attract a new customer. We are doing what we've been doing best for so many years. And really, the consumers are adapting us. It's a change in lifestyle.
If I could just jump in, Jess. We've only got about a minute left. Two questions. One is, if we look at your like-for-like sales at stores year on year, what are they doing? Is it up, down, or flat, would you say?
See, I mean, in the region here, we've been growing. Last year was a very successful year for us. We've done a lot of, new in initiatives.
So the like-for-like sales would have been up last year?
Yeah, double-digit up.
Double-digit up, okay. And the second thing is, in terms of negotiating rents when you're opening stores, are you getting better deals from the malls and the landlords now?
Well, I mean, we're working with one of the largest retail groups here in the region, the Apparel Group, and they're representing us on the ground with the franchise stores. So they're definitely doing everything they can to make a viable deal. on the rents, it has to be in balance. I mean, when you expand, there's a lot of GLA around there in the market. So
that's gross leasable area.
Yes.
Yeah.
So a lot of a lot of store space, and of course, it has to be in balance. I mean, you cannot expect with a lot of new malls coming onto the market that you have to have a fair and representable retail lease package to attract and deliver the same quality to consumers and not cut corners.
Promises to be a busy old year, Jens. Congratulations on the store openings. Thus, have you got a pair, Reg?
I haven't, but my doctor genuinely has told me to, so I'm going to go. I'll pop out after the show today.
Real pleasure to serve you.
Jens Hutter, Managing Director, Middle East and Africa and India for Birkenstock. We thank you. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you very much. Same to you.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. The Business Breakfast's Pick of the Papers.
News editor Natasha Thomas with us in the studio. Hey, Natasha.
Good morning, Richard.
Coronavirus, of course, still making headlines and the travel restrictions. What's the latest you can tell us about?
Yeah, so locally, UAE citizens have been urged to postpone all travel plans to Italy amid fears of over COVID-19. In a statement, the UAE embassy in Rome has said the decision has been taken after at least 470 cases have been detected in the European country. So Emiratis have been advised by the embassy to follow health instructions issued by UAE authorities. They've also been told to avoid visiting areas affected by the virus, and embassy officials have once again urged them to register themselves on the Tawjudi service, which basically facilitated communication with people in times of emergency or crisis so they can coordinate with them when they have to return to the country.
Saudi Arabia within the past few hours making a number of travel restrictions. What do we know in the facts that the Saudi press agency have released?
Yes, so number one, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has temporarily suspended entry for the purpose of Umrah. According to the Saudi press agency, it comes as a precautionary measure to contain the spread of COVID-19. They've also clarified that tourists coming from countries with a high number of coronavirus cases will not be granted entry. GCC nationals will not be able to use their national identity cards to travel to and from Saudi Arabia for the time being, in order for concerned authorities to carry out the necessary health screenings and precautionary measures at specific entry points. So those who are already in the country will be able to leave with their cards, and similarly, Saudi nationals who are currently traveling in the region with their national ID cards will be able to re-enter. But henceforth, they will not be able to leave with their ID cards.
If you are travelling to Saudi Arabia today, you might want to check your travel arrangements. Stay tuned to this radio station for updates, and also the ARN News Centre app's going to have regular updates, isn't it, Natasha? Okay, a little bit closer to home. Let's talk about what is happening here in the UAE. It's a busy, busy day of sports. Should we start with the cycling, Natasha?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Go on.
More road closures, this time in Al Ain. So stage 5 of UAE Tour gets underway this afternoon. Rolling road closures are expected in the city from 11:40 a.m. The cyclists will start their journey in the UAE University area, making their way through E95, E20 and E66. And their final destination is Jebel Hafid, so quite a steep climb there, where they're expected to reach between 3:30 p.m. and 4:30 p.m.
I drove up Jebel Hafid on Saturday. I went for lunch with some friends. It was the wife's birthday. That was quite hairy. The idea of going up there on a push bike is frankly insane. Coming down, even worse.
Yeah.
You'd want to check your brakes quite closely, wouldn't you?
And you've got to do it as well. You've got to do that final incline at the end. It's a 162-kilometre stage, this. So basically, you've done 160 Ks, and then you've got two like that. You know, not great radio, but basically upwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scary stuff.
It's incredible.
Also happening this weekend, you've got the tennis. We're getting to the business end of the tennis, aren't we, Tom? You've been down there every night. You say today is looking like the best day so far.
This is looking great. Men's singles quarterfinals day for belters to look forward to later on. Action gets underway on the Dubai Duty Free Championship court from 2 o'clock this afternoon, and then it just keeps coming. You've got Andre Rublev at the 7th seed against Dan Evans, who's been impressive in this tournament. Two big scalps for him already. That's followed by the German Jan-Lennard Struff taking on the young maverick of the men's game, Tsitsipas. Stefanos Tsitsipas is on court second up. The big one that a lot of people will be looking forward to, he brings out the crowds, does Nole. That's Novak Djokovic taking on tough opponent in the Russian Karen Khachanov, top 10 player in his own right. And then an all-French affair at the end of proceedings with the French flair, Gael Monfils against your favourite Richard Gasquet to wrap things up. So that action gets underway at 2 o'clock, goes all the way through till whatever time it finishes. And just a quick addendum to that one, nice little touch from Novak Djokovic yesterday, won his game very convincingly, straight after his game, paid tribute to Maria Sharapova, who's bowed out from the women's game in the last 24 hours, hugely successful.
What did he have to say about her?
Just said what an inspiration she's been, how sad it was that she wasn't able to come back from injury, how that she had faced a lot of criticism during her playing career. Obviously, a lot of people will have highlighted the ban that she had to face as well at the height of her career. One thing you can't take away with is the fact that she is one of the highest earning athletes of all time. That's male and female. Her career earnings on court reached $38.8 million, according to the WTA. That makes her the third highest earning female athlete ever after Serena Williams and Venus Williams. But it goes much more further than that, with respective earnings taking her well past the 100 million mark with sponsorship deals as well. So I think she's all right. I think she's sorted. I think she's got a nest egg.
She thinks enough has been squirreled away. She's got a big career ahead of her. What she chooses to do next, I'm sure she'll be very successful. She's clearly a very determined and committed individual. So lots of celebrities in the UAE at the moment, sporting celebrities, but I'm most excited about a movie celebrity who's coming to the UAE next week.
Quantico. They say it's the toughest boot camp, grad school, all rolled into one.
Now, let's see if you can survive.
Find the truth.
Who's that, Natasha Thomas?
Priyanka Chopra.
Priyanka Chopra, who is coming to the most unglamorous event you could possibly imagine next week in the UAE. She is going to be, not performing, but speaking at a conference, the Intergovernmental Conference on Communication in Sharjah. Unlikely, but this is what she's doing. She's going to be giving an address titled "Why Does the Screen Have So Much Impact on Public Opinion?" And she's going to be discussing the power of visual media, movies, TV and others, social media as well, to ignite cultural curiosity and spark interest in commonalities with other cultures. Well, I mean, it sounds like a university lecture. Also going to analyse how it impacts societies by highlighting differences and reinforcing stereotypes. I was really excited about Priyanka Chopra coming this morning, and then I found out that basically all of my colleagues know her. Tom, remind the 30-second version of your Priyanka Chopra story.
Ms. Chopra, Priyanka, could I have a word, please?
That was him on the red carpet at the Golden Globes, and she said,
"Yes, of course. I who can deny a polite English accent?"
So he knows her. Then I was telling this story moments later to Sid and Parikshit from our sister station, City 1016. And I mean, yeah, we've interviewed Priyanka Chopra as well several times. What about you? Have you got a Priyanka
Chopra?
I've
never interviewed her, but I follow her on social media and I really do admire her. She's one of the most articulate Indian actresses out there, and now, of course, international actor. So I'm not surprised that she's coming down to give a speech.
Looking
at
forward
this
to
event.
That's happening next week in Sharjah. Natasha Thomas, we'll let you go. Busy day for you on the news desk at the ARN News Centre, so we'll let you get back there.
Thank you.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Newsmakers.
The movers and shakers shaping your world.
My newsmaker is this guy.
Oh, I'm just wild about Harry, and he's just wild about me.
The late, great Julie Garland. No, not her. Harry, the artist formerly known as His Royal Highness the Duke of Sussex, was at an event last night in Scotland, in his native country, the United Kingdom, and rather than using his royal titles, he insisted that everyone just call him Harry. And this is interesting for a couple of reasons. One, I think it raises an interesting question about increasing informality, particularly among a younger generation of royal people. But it's also interesting because Tom Urquhart, who's here for the next 1 hour and 20 minutes or so we'll take full advantage of you while you are still presenting the Business Breakfast, you've known Prince Harry for a long time, done an awful lot of work with him, and spent an awful lot of time introducing him at various events. What did you make of this change in protocol?
Yeah, interesting, because obviously as a royal and as a direct incumbent for the indirect line of the throne, he obviously had his Royal Highness title for a long time. Then he got married and obviously became the Duke of Sussex. Since their decision earlier this year to go their own way, as it were, for want of a better phrase, and to pay for themselves. There has been a lot of discussion about the use of the royal titles and how he will be addressed. And he's obviously made a very public statement overnight, flying back to the UK to take part in charity that is one of the numerous charities that he's thrown his full support behind, and doing away with the formalities, as you mentioned. It is surprising because it is obviously going to be an issue moving forward, because the palace themselves are making an issue of it. The palace are the ones seem to be reiterating that the titles cannot be used. There can be no reference to all things royal for either Meghan or Harry should they wish to advance their commercial interests outside of the firm moving forward. Harry doesn't seem to be railing against that at all. In fact, last night, by all accounts, given the informality of the way that, you know, he addressed the crowd, that he wanted to be addressed, the hugs on stage afterwards, the very sort of laid-back approach and demeanour that he's always basically had.
Because you know him on stage and off stage as well. You've toured Africa with him in the United States, haven't you?
So, yeah,
you know,
so we always had a no-tie policy. even at sort of black tie dinners and things like that. So basically we do a polo event, and there'd always be some sort of official function afterwards. And one would immediately think, oh, it's a royal function. And therefore, but, you know, one of his insistences, and which speaks volumes of the man, is the fact it was always be no tie, a no tie policy for those sort of get-togethers. So it's obviously that's what makes him feel comfortable. And this is the decisions that he's taken are obviously what makes him feel comfortable. And therefore, why would you not embrace that? But there seems to be, I think the media want to make an issue of it, obviously. There are a number of royal spokespeople that want to make an issue of it, obviously. But just judging on his so-called performance last night, not that it was, but his very public outpouring last night, he looked at one with his decision at the moment. So let's hope it sorts itself out moving forward. But you're right, there seems to be a lot more embracing of informality.
Well, this is him speaking, not last night, but back in 2013, not in Scotland, but in Dubai, in both English and Arabic.
The beauty of this is you know where your money's going. It's going into a foundation. It's going into brickwork as such. And it will be a home to thousands of children coming through for a two-week program. Shukran lehador rekum et amena le Dubai 2020 el faswa el najka. Thank you.
You introduced him that night, didn't you? Back in 2013 for his charity centre Bali.
Yeah.
So how would you have introduced him back in 2013 before he was married?
So he would have been His Royal Highness Prince Henry of Wales.
That was his title then. And then when you introduced him after he was married?
His Royal Highness, the Duke of Sussex.
Okay, and next time you introduce him, it will be?
Azar.
And we were making the comparison with Sheikh Hamdan here in Dubai. And you see that with his Twitter feed, which is very much the formal one, His Highness Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed Rashid Al Maktoum, Crown Prince of Dubai. But then Fazza, his Instagram account with 10 million followers, was looking at it this morning. Literally, the most recent photo, it was him in his G-Wagon in Dubai, sticking his head out the window, kissing a camel. Mm. And so that informality is there among younger members of the ruling family here.
And I think that's what creates the sort of friction, if you like, is the traditional means of communication with one's subjects. Has not seen the sort of impact that social media has had. And yet, how do you reach out to a younger generation? How do you reach out to your people? And we're seeing more and more individuals, but also royal organisations, using social media to their benefit. And it seems to be working. If you're not doing it, then you're out of time.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.